This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. The California Reparations Task Force is readying its final report by July 1st of this year. The task force was established by the state legislature via AB 3121, and its members were appointed by Governor Gavin Newsom in 2021. Among the members was my guest Lisa Holder. I interviewed Lisa in late 2021 after the task force had begun holding hearings, and at that time she explained that its goal was to make, quote, evidence-based recommendations drawn from 2 years of gathering testimony and documenting the harms arising from, quote, the original systems of oppression like slavery and Jim Crow segregation, and the continuing and ongoing systems of oppression that we're seeing in institutional racism and structural racism. Lisa Holder is president of the Equal Justice Society, and I'm so pleased to have her on the program. Welcome back to the program, Lisa. It's almost wrapping up this two-year process, right?
Yeah, Sonali, thank you for having me back on the program. Always great to see you and to talk to you. And yes, we are going to be sunsetting at the end of June. It's hard to believe 2 years have gone by. It has not been uneventful.
You know, it's a long time, and yet for what the task force was tasked with, I imagine that it might have felt like a very short time. It's a huge task. So you held these hearings. Overall, when explaining this to the public, how do you explain what it was that you did for the past 2 years in terms of gathering testimony?
Yeah, you know, I'm a civil rights lawyer and a litigator, so I kind of explain it in a way that I think is understandable, especially to people who have served as jurors, which is most people who engage in our civil society. And so what we were doing is that we were building the case for African-American reparations. And so similar to a trial where you may have sat on as a jury, we brought in witnesses. We brought in two types of witnesses. We brought in fact witnesses, which means regular everyday people who have experienced egregious discrimination and have been impacted by structural, institutional, and systemic racism. And we also brought in witnesses who are experts. So meaning lawyers, doctors, judges, all types of practitioners, as well as academics who have a strong base of knowledge about disparities caused by anti-Black policies and practices. So we brought in hundreds of witnesses into the process. We spoke to over 100 expert witnesses to talk to us about discrimination, anti-Black animus, and systemic and structural racism, and the legacies of slavery and how they manifest today. So we brought in over 100 of those experts to talk to us. And then we also brought in dozens of fact witnesses and also used other research tools to speak to Black Californians to talk to us about their experience of discrimination today. Discrimination that is based on the stereotypes that stem from slavery that they have experienced on a daily basis and that has tremendously impacted their ability to make a living, their ability to get equal access to healthcare, education, housing, access to capital and financial wealth to build businesses. And we collected and curated all of that data and put it together in what I call a book of truth, a book of truth, a book of knowledge.
Wow.
And this is the interim California Task Force interim report, which the interim report was 500 pages. The interim report really curates all of that testimony. There's a final report that's going to be coming out on June 29th when we sunset that we're going to be handing over to the governor and the legislature. And that includes additional information from witnesses, but also includes our recommendations to start to stem and abate the harms of the legacies of slavery.
So let's talk about those recommendations. That's where the rubber meets the road, right? That's where it really starts to then become real. The word reparations has been bandied about for a very, very long time. In fact, even getting to the formation of the task force was a decades-long process. And often there's a push and pull, those who feel that reparations need, in order to really be valid, need to be financial, and others who are really uncomfortable with the exchange of money and who really would prefer that it was, you know, just a sort of reconciliation and symbolic. So where did the task force fall? It was always meant to be concrete, some sort of concrete recompense, right?
Yeah, I mean, concrete is critical, but comprehensive is equally critical. We are dealing with 400 years of harm within the context of the United States and almost 200 years of harm within the context of the state of California. And the harms and atrocities committed against the Black community have been comprehensive. And therefore, the response and the redress has to be comprehensive. And so under AB 3121, we are mandated to look at the international human rights reparations protocols and standards, which have five components, right? Five components. Compensation is one of the five components, right? So potentially cash payments and money, one of five. The others include an apology and satisfaction. Those words are used interchangeably. It also includes restitution, rehabilitation, and most importantly, guarantees of non-repetition, which means you have to rehabilitate systems to make sure that those systems do not continue to harm Black people. And you have to put interventions within these systems to abate white supremacy, which has been the driver of so many of these harms. So the conversation and the discourse has always been embedded within those five components. It's not just about cash payments, and it's not just about an apology, and it's not just about systems change. It's about all of the above.
Right. Ensuring it doesn't happen again, which I think probably or possibly sets this task force apart from other efforts. And I'm wondering, before we get to talking numbers, because I think that's where a lot of, you know, folks are really interested in finding out what this actually means in dollar amounts, in addition to the structural changes that are needed to ensure it doesn't happen again. I'm wondering how the timing of the task force was set up for success, because it happened in the year and a half, it was set up in the year after the most historic racial justice uprisings in the history of the country. More people came out on the streets than at any other time in just about every city in the country in the summer of 2020. And you had the task force start up a year later, even though there were decades of groundwork leading up to it. Did that timing make a difference in terms of how things unfolded?
Yeah, you know, the murder of Mr. George Floyd, that public lynching and the outcry and the outpouring of support for racial justice that we saw in 2020 was really a catalyst for AB 3121. That was the time to get that legislation passed and to convene this task force, which is tasked with you know, educating the public about the history of discrimination and racism in the state of California. So the timing was very helpful because we started at a moment where people were tuned in. They saw what happened to Mr. Floyd. They sat and they watched those 9 minutes of horror, that lynching. And people were motivated to intervene. People were willing to accept the fact that structural racism is real, and has real world horrific impacts on the daily lives of Black people. And so the narrative was open, right? People were open to disruption of the white supremacist narrative that has always been controlling in our society. People were open to something else, to another narrative that was more inclusive, that actually centered the experience of Black people who had been marginalized for so long. So the timing was good because we were at a moment where people were more open to having this conversation. The window, what I will say though, the window on that open-mindedness was narrow, you know, and unfortunately, yeah, we live in a society where unless people see something jarring and emotionally triggering, they're not going to pay attention. So they saw that horrible murder of George Floyd, and they could not look away and they could not ignore it. But within months, people had sort of gravitated back to apathy and to acceptance of white supremacist norms. So that momentum didn't necessarily, wasn't necessarily consistent throughout the life of the task force.
So how, in terms of the recommendations that the task force will be making at the end of June, what information can you tell us about how the harm will be determined and translated into dollars? Because that has the ability to help people in a very concrete way. Black Americans have, just on the issue of housing discrimination, basically been kept out of the housing market in very, very serious ways. And financial compensation could help them into the homes that they should have been able to get into decades ago, or whenever it was they tried to get into homes. So how can that be calculated?
Well, what I can tell you is that, you know, the task force relied on the expertise of economists. So we had four internationally recognized economists who were calculating the harm in terms of quantifying it, in terms of as a dollar amount, what does the harm look like? And obviously they are experts when it comes to quantifying and having that conversation. So we relied on their expertise when we were thinking about compensation, which is only one of the components, as I said. The task force itself, we practitioners, academics, and organizers, community organizers that we are, we really focused on systems and systems change, right? So focusing on recommendations to ensure that the wealth gap is being closed, right? We know that there is a wealth gap in our society where for every $110,000 that a white house holds in wealth, an African-American household holds only 10,000. So we're looking at this 11 to 1 horrible disparity, which is completely embedded in structural racism. And unlike the white supremacist narrative that we have all imbibed for so long, that says that gap is really about Black people's incompetence, criminality, lack of industry, that is a false narrative. That gap is about structural racism. It's about that racism embedded in our systems and legacies of slavery and segregation. And so the task force focused on creating new systems and evolving existing systems to make sure that there is equity and equality, and that the most marginalized people were actually getting access to educational opportunity, housing opportunity, not being pushed into this criminal legal system, greater access to health care, equal health care, et cetera. That was our focus. I'm not going to spend, what I will say is that the economists did come up with dollar figures that the legislature can use to calculate a dollar amount and an actual monetary compensation to the most harmed descendant class. But again, we also focused on the apology that the state of California needs to put together and send out to the descendant class and African Americans, and the systems change that needs to happen in every sector of our society.
I understand that there were five categories of harm that were identified: health harms, mass incarceration, over-policing, housing discrimination, the devaluation of businesses, and unjust property takings. Health harms was the biggest category. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, there has been devastating health care inequality when it comes to African Americans. And frankly and unfortunately, a lot of that is about bias within our healthcare system, and especially implicit bias. I mean, doctors are heroic. We saw that during the pandemic. But doctors and people in the healthcare system, healthcare workers, have grown up in a society like the rest of us that has a white supremacist narrative that essentially says that Black lives don't matter and that Black people are inferior. And that narrative that we've all imbibed, it affects our decision making as professionals. And so in the healthcare system, we have a system where Black women, regardless of income, regardless of education, Black women who are birthing mothers are 3 to 4 times more likely to die than white women from birth-related causes. We have a healthcare system where Black newborn babies, when they are handled or cared for by a white doctor, are 3 to 4 times more likely to die than white newborn babies. We have a system where African-American men, their life expectancy is 7 years less than white men. We have a healthcare system where nearly 50% of medical students and 25% of physicians believe that Black people have thicker skin and feel less pain.
Wow.
And what we see in actuality is that Black people who present with painful illnesses, including children, are not given the same access to palliative care, to drugs that will lessen their pain. So, for example, a Black child who presents in the emergency room with appendicitis is 80% less likely to be given painkillers and opioids than a white
80%?
Than a white child presenting with the same symptoms. So, you know, we have a healthcare system that is extraordinarily dangerous and cruel to Black people because of the legacy of slavery, which made us believe that Black people existed only as chattel. Black people's bodies existed for the purpose of being harmed, frankly. Our bodies existed just to work, just to produce labor, and not to be cared for, not to be seen as human. And so that type of implicit bias, those stereotypes, are driving these horrific healthcare outcomes that we are seeing at every level of our healthcare system. That's why the calculation for healthcare damages is so hard. Two studies just came out that showed that that within our healthcare system, African Americans are harmed so egregiously that the country is losing about $830 billion in potential wealth because of the harms that are happening to Black people in the healthcare system, because our life expectancy is so much lower. It really is one of the most egregious areas of discrimination and systemic bias.
Right. So the compensation that's going to be recommended is off the charts compared to for the other categories for health compared to the other categories. Let's finally conclude, Lisa, with what you expect or how you expect the task force's recommendations to be received. Already we're seeing the kind of the coverage in right-leaning and conservative media start to mischaracterize what was done. For example, the Wall Street Journal headlined its editorial board's op-ed, "California may bill you for slavery," was the headline. And in it, I'll just quote one small quote where it said, "The slavery was a scourge and so was Jim Crow, but the U.S. has done decades of penance to ameliorate their damage, including spending trillions of dollars in social welfare programs. One moral question is why Americans who played no part in either slavery or Jim Crow should pay for the sins of the past." I mean, so much to unpack there. I'll just, you know, your brief nutshell response to this sort of coverage, which is likely to be the kind of coverage we'll see, especially on the right.
Well, you know, one of the mandates for the task force was to do a great deal of public education and to explain to the public facts, historical facts, data, evidence, and the report that I showed you is replete with that evidence, with that data, with those statistics that tell the true story about the absence of interventions to ameliorate the harms of slavery and Jim Crow, and that really tell the story of about that show the through line between those horrific systems and the horrific outcomes that we're seeing today, right? So that is our task. That is what we did that was our purpose in speaking to so many witnesses and interviewing so many Californians in curating these stories and this evidence so that we can have a factual record that is accurate. I mean, these days we are very ahistorical, completely counterfactual, and people just come up with alternative narratives that are not based on evidence, truth, or facts. This has been a truth-telling process, an evidence-based process, and I recommend that people read the task force report, which can be found on the California DOJ's website, and recognize that they actually know very little about the history of discrimination in our country and in California. And by educating themselves, they can begin to do the work to eliminate their own biases and to build a more inclusive democracy.
Do you hope that other states take on such task forces similarly?
Yeah, you know, we are seeing a groundswell of this truth-telling happening at the local level, you know, where all over the state of California, you have local municipalities doing their own truth-telling and reparations work. All over the country, we're seeing this at the local level. It's very important that the work that the task force has done serve as a bellwether for this to happen at the state level and ultimately at the federal level. And I know that there are many states like New York and New Jersey that are working very hard to put their own task force in place, and of course at the federal level, with the leadership of Sheila Jackson Lee, AB 40 is going through the federal system, and hopefully lead to a federal task force and federal reparations.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time and the work you've done along with the other members of the task force over these past couple of years. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sonali. You have a wonderful day.
You too. My guest has been Lisa Holder. She's a member of the California Reparations Task Force and president of the Equal Justice Society. And we've been talking about the upcoming recommendations that the task force will be making to the California legislature after 2 years of hearings and testimony. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali. Bye.